On this show, you'll find inspiration, motivation, and advice from experts, as well as valuable tips on how to get started or improve your business. Let's dive into how you can begin and grow your wisdom business. Inspiring others looks different for everyone. How will you inspire? Welcome to the Wise Zone podcast. And today we're chatting with Ken Fleischer. Ken is a stage fright coach. He helps people with speaking anxiety to permanently overcome this obstacle. While it often is either joked about or dismissed as a trivial quirk that some people have, it can actually be quite intrusive. Ken, welcome to the Wise Zone podcast.
Thanks so much. I'm really excited to be here tonight.
Wonderful. Can you let us know how you got started with your coaching business and why you went into the stage fright business?
That is a great question, which actually has quite a long answer. It's going to wind and twist a little bit along the way. I'll get the beginning stuff through quickly here. Okay. It actually started all because when my daughter was born and my wife and I realized that, you know, babies are expensive, that we might need some more money. So I decided to look for, you know, another side business I could do. That was the genesis of it. It didn't start as coaching. I was actually, you mentioned about your building an app. I started out building an app as well, but I didn't really know what I was doing. And I went to a Lean Startup boot camp. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Lean. Have you heard Lean Startup?
No, I haven't.
It's a method of getting to your getting through the problems quickly and finding the solutions quickly.
Right.
Pioneered by Toyota, but we don't need to get into all that. Basically, you've heard minimum viable product. That's where that comes from. And the minimum viable product for the app I was building, it turns out, according to my coaches, was coaching. So to deliver the same result, but in the easiest way possible. So the easiest way is just one-on-one with people, just helping them.
Yep.
And that's how I got started with coaching. At that time, it was productivity, task management, project management, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Procrastination is also something I help people with. And a lot of people don't realize. So the issue with procrastination, what makes people procrastinate? Mm-hmm. It turns out is the same thing that gives people speaking anxiety. And yeah, I know. I couldn't believe it too. I learned it watching a YouTube video, and some woman was talking about how she had stage fright, and she started talking about, she mentioned the fight or flight response, mm-hmm. which is really the underlying cause for the stage fright, for the speaking anxiety.
Yeah.
And I think she was actually a musician, but it's the same mechanism. Mm-hmm. And so that's what causes procrastination as well, is the fight or flight response. And I have a solution for that. I help people with procrastination, but I started thinking, wow, I wonder if the same thing with a few tweaks might work with, you know, stage fright as well. And so I found some brave volunteers who had speaking engagements coming up and admitted to having the stage fright and for many years and were willing to give it a try. And it worked very quickly and quite easily, in fact. So I realized that I was onto something.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people have we'll call it speaking anxiety, public speaking anxiety, but stage fright. I think it's something like 75% of the population has some degree of speaking anxiety.
Yeah.
And about 20% on top of that, it's pretty severe. I mean, it's like a phobia level severe.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the problem is that that stops people from getting things that they want in life. So I realized this is a bigger thing than procrastination. So I decided to go all in on it and build a business around it. And right. And you were talking to me about how one of the reasons you love helping with your tool and helping people is that moment when they get it.
Like, yes. Yeah.
Right. and you see it in their face. And I can't tell you that enough how much I feel that same way. When I see that moment when someone realizes, oh my God, I don't have stage fright anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I've had it for 17 years and now it's just gone. I mean,
yeah. That anxiety feeling, that flushed away. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get a rush out of helping people see that happen to themselves. You know, that's just as exciting for me.
Yeah. Well, that gives you the drive, doesn't it? It does. That every day. You become obsessed in it, don't you? It's just this.
Yes, exactly.
I've got to make this.
So that's the long and winding road. That's how I got to here.
That's amazing. And why in particular did you concentrate on actually the speaking confidence side of things?
Sure. So stage fright is a wide term, right? Yeah. I mean, it's speaking anxiety. It's performance anxiety.
Okay.
So musicians get it. Actors get it. Mm. Dancers get it. You know, and it's the same thing for everyone.
Yeah.
Now, and when I say it's the same thing, it's the same fight or flight response that's causing these symptoms, that's causing these performance issues, and in many cases causing people to just avoid the whole situation altogether. But for each person, it's very individual. So the actual underlying, the root of it for each person is a different experience from their past, basically. Right. Okay. But the solution is really quite similar. You still have to work with each person to find what's happening.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The steps to find that and to counter it are the same.
Right. Okay.
And I focused on the public speaking because it's much more, that's the word. So I don't want to say widespread, but that's not the word. A lot of people have it. So many have it.
Yeah.
And it's a little different from, I mean, it's different from like musicians or dancers, let's say. And, you know, at some point I may work with those groups as well.
Yeah.
But I chose public speaking because in business, you know, I'm in the business world, you know, there's a lot of it. And I know I could help a lot of people with that. So,
yeah, no, that's amazing. And with respect to, so for example, I know if I've had to do a couple of pitch nights, for example, or, you know, as a founder of the platform I'm creating. And I tell you what, like online, so much easier because I'm here, I'm comfortable in my environment. I know everyone's over there and they can see just my face and that is it. Like I don't have to have any other concerns. And doing the pitch nights, I remember I'd have to breathe in, breathe out. I'd love to ask you, what is the difference with us in the sense of some people, like for me, I can do a podcast quite easily, no problem. But put me in front of a huge group of people and all of a sudden I'm losing, you know, my train of thought or I'm stuttering my words. Is that a common thing that happens to a lot of people?
Yeah. So what you described, and I'm really glad you described that particular situation because I could give you a dozen people who could stand up in an auditorium and give a talk like they were born to do it, but put them in front of the camera like we are right now and they'll freeze. You know, it's just the opposite.
Wow. Okay.
And and that's where you see stage fright, which is also another sort of umbrella term, you know, really it's performance anxiety, but it can come in many forms, speaking to an auditorium, speaking on camera like we are right now.
Yeah.
Speaking just to a group of 10 in a conference room or even just one-on-one in person. Mm. Or maybe you can speak in an auditorium, but not if there's someone really important there. Like let's say the president of the United States is there to listen to you and then you freeze up, you know. Yeah. So it's very, very, can be very specific. The common theme is what I mentioned before. Mm. It's something from your past.
Yeah.
It's usually something from your childhood. Where there was some event that caused you to have this association with that particular type of interaction, that type of speaking or can I give you an example?
Of course, go right ahead.
Yeah. So and I'm making this one up. This didn't happen to me, but let's say you're in like third grade, okay? Yep. Third, fourth grade. And every kid has to get up in front of the class and give a 1 minute talk about their drawing or something. I don't know. Right. And everyone's doing it and everything's fine. You get up and do it and maybe something happens and everybody laughs. Right. Could be an innocent laugh, or maybe they're actually laughing because something you did seemed funny or was awkward, but that triggers some, you know, that's something that triggers a negative response because as humans, we're social creatures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, going back to caveman days, you need to be part of the clan if you want to survive.
Yeah.
So you socially have to be accepted.
Yeah.
So being laughed at in front of an audience, so to speak, you know, will give you a negative association with the act of getting up in front of an audience. And you may not even remember that event consciously. And it maybe it happened a couple more times even, but it happened enough so that your brain is saying, oh, we don't want to do that again. It's not good for us.
So just like all of a sudden you have this mental, your mind's protecting you from going through that again. So it just puts this.
Exactly. Your mind thinks it's protecting you. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the key. It thinks it's protecting you. It's actually, I mentioned it's the fight or flight response. Well, that's usually in response to some danger. I mean, what's the danger of talking to an auditorium? There is none. It's a false danger.
And that, you know, that's interesting because it, you know, there's that typical, like everyone has this, they call it the imposter syndrome.
Yes.
And that is a huge component where we just sort of carry that title around when we first start. And it's just a title that is just mentioned. So we just go, oh, that's my excuse. And we hold on to it, don't we? We're like, it's imposter syndrome. I just feel like I shouldn't be here. And that's the reason why I don't want to go on. But there are very likely other reasons why. And you just have to overcome that. Do you find a lot of people use that as an excuse, let's say, quotation marks?
Yeah. So stage fright is so prevalent and, you know, speaking anxiety, if you want to call it that instead, whichever, I find different people relate to different terms for some reason, it's so prevalent that it's sort of accepted. It's like, okay, he has stage fright now, so he doesn't have to do that. You know, we won't ask him to get up. He has stage fright. It's just sort of accepted.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a shame because it doesn't really have to be that way.
They can fix that. Yeah, they can overcome that.
It can be fixed.
Yeah.
People tend to wear that badge. Like it's an identity. They identify with
it. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly.
And not even understanding that it's something that can actually be changed, which is a shame.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot that you miss out on when you don't fix it. You miss out on lots of opportunities in life.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people, you know, you might get approached to do, you know, to be a speaker. And I know, like I've been approached to be a speaker and I really had to question myself. I think, do I really want to do this? And because it was online, I said, okay. Like it just felt a bit easier to do it. Okay, I'll do it online. But I know I think a lot of us have to, you know, and it does take practice, I think, you know, for a lot of us to just, you know, that comfort, you know, 'cause it does. It must come from little trigger points somewhere when you're in childhood, somewhere along the way, or who knows, adulthood too. I guess all of us can be triggered by any sort of situation, but it's so good knowing that, you know, there are people such as yourself helping people like us. And this is one thing that, you know, the Wise Known podcast is all about. It's about letting our audience know that we all have something to share online and be, you know, create a business online. It's not scary to create a business online. It sounds it, but it's not. And, you know, just listen to all of our guests and all their journeys and what they've gone through. But this conversation just with you itself is that whole different component too of just having the guts to actually talk online and actually share it verbally and you know, visually with people is such a huge component when you actually do get online. Just takes practice, though, I guess, doesn't it?
Of course, it takes practice to build the skills of being good at it, just like any skill that you would have. But you don't actually need the practice in order to overcome the speaking anxiety. That's something unique about the solution that I've sort of developed. Like you go to Toastmasters, you know, a lot of people go to Toastmasters. Their solution is to literally just keep getting up there and speaking until it doesn't cause you anxiety anymore. Sometimes I've read stories and heard people talking how it's taken years for them to get over that. And that sounds tiring.
That's long. Yeah.
And can that work? Yes. Can that backfire? Yes. Yeah. What people don't talk about as much is if you just keep trying, just keep practicing, just keep doing it. Remember how your brain was saying, you know, this isn't such a good idea. Maybe we should avoid this.
Yeah.
Well, if you keep going at it and having more negative experiences, you're actually reinforcing the anxiety rather than overcoming it.
Very true.
And you can actually make the anxiety worse. So I'm not a big fan of that solution. And it also doesn't have to take that long. There are other ways, which are much quicker and much more effective.
I'm going to touch a little bit on that a little bit later on.
Yeah, sure.
So let's get back to, you know, how you created your wisdom business and coaching people and so forth. What steps did you take when you decided, obviously, kids cost a lot of money. We've got to get another bit of income coming in. Let's concentrate on this niche. So you've discovered your niche. You've discovered what you want to do. What did you do? What were the steps that you took?
Oh, I did all the wrong things first. Got those out of the way for a few years. basically, I just tried a lot of stuff. I thought I found advice in articles or in groups where I had people sort of feeding me information. And I just tried stuff and it was not working. I could not find clients. I couldn't sell anything. I couldn't even help people for free. No one even wanted that.
Yeah.
And so in the end, what really worked for me, trying to be a coach, was to hire a coach. I needed a coach.
Yeah.
And once I finally came to that realization, which I wish I'd have realized years earlier, and I have more than one coach now for different aspects of the business. And I imagine I will continue to have coaches. And the more that I learn about all this, the more I learn that you see like the big people in the industries out there. There's the big marketers. Basically everyone has coaches, even the big guys.
Yeah, exactly.
and so why would I think I can do it myself? I wish I'd have just known that when I was starting out.
Yeah.
The best advice is to find a good coach or a good coaching program.
Right.
You can find good group coaching programs, which are far less expensive and just as or more effective.
Yeah.
So just finding the right program for what you're trying to build or the right coach for what you're trying to build can save you an enormous amount of headache and money. I wish I had known that.
I know. Don't we all? Don't we all?
Yeah, exactly.
To validate your idea, and when you finally, you obviously had your coach there, did they help direct you in the steps to take, or they just gave you that drive? What was the purpose in that?
Some of the mistakes I made early is my ideas didn't really need validating because I was entering a very crowded field with a lot of successful people. I knew people were paying for this, right? I mean, it's productivity stuff, right?
Yeah.
So managing your task or getting organized, how to build habits, set goals, achieve goals. People were paying for that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So I didn't really need to validate the concept. I just needed to figure out how to stand apart, which I never completely figured out in that way.
Yeah.
So it didn't really work until I began working on the speaking anxiety stuff.
Right.
So the productivity coaching, I had clients. I did have paying clients.
Yep.
But it never really took off. But when I got a coach for the speaking anxiety, and they really helped me work through how to define what my values are in the business, who I'm trying to help, what I represent, they have gave me some great exercises and helped talk me through it. That really helped. So I don't know if I'd have actually come to it on my own. And I'll add one more thing. So as I was trying to figure that out on my own before, because you get these worksheets, you know, this worksheet, you know, and not having had a lot of clients, I was like always just guessing, like, okay, who's my client? What do they need? What are
they? Avatar. You know?
Yeah. And, you know, it was just a lot of guesswork, and I guess I didn't guess right, you know, but even though I knew that people do pay for this stuff, and I was even trying to model after, you know, find people successfully selling similar things and just sort of modeling what they're doing, still wasn't quite working for me. It wasn't until I got to the stage fright stuff where I was able to really understand what it was that people needed and what and were looking for.
Right.
And a lot of that actually came from just one-on-one talking to people about what they need, not guessing anymore, but talking to them and asking.
Yeah. Well, that was going to be my next question. How did you do it? And that's what you have to do, don't you? Like when you're doing a business like this, we all go into it because we know what our understanding is and we know what our needs were. So we presume everyone else is the same, which, you know, there probably are similarities here and there, which is how we try to build our avatar, our perfect audience, our cast client, all that sort of stuff. And it's so hard, but yeah, you do have to go out there and ask those questions. Were there any major lessons that you learned, you know, over time dealing with your audience and how you coached them? Were there any major lessons that you learned in how you actually teach or, you know, share your wisdom across
to
your clients? Yeah. Were there any lessons?
Yes, absolutely. So in the beginning, I just taught, you know, as a coach, I was just, here's all of the things I know how to do. Here's how you do them. And I was just like, it was me talking a lot and teaching a lot. I wasn't asking enough questions. Mm. And I've learned that I need to ask more questions to let them speak about what they're struggling with, what they need help with.
Yeah.
Even if I know what the answer is going to be, they need to have me hear them first.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it's important for me to let them get it out. And let them, and also not just to like teach by just giving all the information, but to coach, in other words, to let them try stuff and then help them to find the solution also, they're on their own, and I can guide them rather than just handing them everything and too much information all at once. Yes. I was guilty of that in the beginning too.
Oh, aren't we all? Don't worry.
Sure. So yeah, those are the things I've learned.
When we're the impatient type as well, it's like, oh, we're all, you know, energized with all this information. It's like, take it. It's really good. You just throw it at people and they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
But
yeah, to scale back for sure.
Yeah, you have to scale back, don't you? I think that's, you know, that is a big that's great advice there in itself, what you mentioned, you know, when it comes to coaching, listening and letting them get those moments of, okay, because as they're talking, as they're giving an answer, they're realizing certain things, and then you just trigger off, oh, what about this question? And then it just slowly builds up and up, and that's
exactly,
that's a big portion of it. You personally growing through this experience as being a coach, is there anything that you've just, you know, how you've grown personally with how you've taught people, coached people, just anything in your experiences with other people?
Basically, I think, yes, I've become a lot more clear on my own values, essentially, and like what it is that I want to accomplish with what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And it's affected how I interact with my family and my friends, and, you know, it really has kind of bled out. And, you know, I ask more questions everywhere now. It's curiosity is a great thing. So
it is. It really is.
Yeah.
When it comes to speaking confidently and realizing what you have to say in response or as a speaker on a stage and so forth, is that a component that you teach as well with regards to your coaching, you know?
Well, it's not right now, but it's something I'm considering adding. another thing I've learned over the years is, do you ever watch the BBC series Sherlock?
Yes.
Okay, so you know his mind palace. That's actually a real thing, and I know how to do that, and you can use it for speaking on a stage. So it's a technique that goes back to ancient Greece. It's like 3,500-year-old technique, and because before there was writing, people had to memorize these big, long speeches, and this is how they did it. And it's by using imagery in locations. So you just picture these made up images that remind you of what the talking point is. And let's say you're at your local mall, you know which store comes after which store. And so in front of each store is the next talking point. And that's how you can remember your speech as you go. So something like that. Yeah, I'm thinking of adding that as something to my program. Haven't that quite decided to work it in yet.
But that would be amazing.
Yeah, it's called a mind palace or a memory palace or there's a lot of names for it.
A lot of names, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a great idea. And I think that would really, with a lot of people out there who do, you know, talks or, you know, get online and so forth, it's just that memory of, oh, hang on. I'm just trying to put it into words here, but I know from my own experiences, so I'm just kind of like, let out all these weaknesses I have now. But I know, like, when it comes to sort of you doing a recording, for example, and you think, I've just got to have the script there so I can see it. But hang on a minute. When it's recording me, it's going to see my eyes going over here, going over there. And then I just add that extra stress on myself to try and remember things. And I know I have the worst memory. And my memory is only, I've learned this over time, but I know that my memory is instigated by emotions that I carry with those memories. So I have to add emotion to my script, which I know it sounds a bit weird, but that's just how I do it myself. And whether it's the right way or wrong way, I don't know, it just works for me. But I've learned that there are just so many ways. And once I knew that that's one way of remembering things, I became a little bit more confident with speaking in front of the camera. And that's a huge thing. It's that memory. It's that, what am I going to talk about? You know,
I love that story you just told. And I used to do the same. I had the same problem. I would, like, if I'd give a talk, I gave a keynote once, and I kept filling out what I was going to say for each of my slides, I kept filling in more and more to the point where I literally just wrote it out like a script, and I ended up just reading the whole thing. And how boring is that, right? I mean, that is a boring delivery. And that actually, I didn't understand at the time, but that's actually stage fright. That is one manifestation of it, because it's the fear of forgetting what to say.
Yeah.
You know, you're afraid your mind's going to go blank. So you make notes of every, you basically read, you just read it. It's just not a good oral presentation. It's great if you're writing a paper for a journal, but it's not so good if you're talking to an auditorium.
No.
and so once I understood that that was actually stage fright, and because I never thought I had stage fright. My heart doesn't really race. My throat doesn't go dry. I don't, you know, all those symptoms people typically get. I never get any of that. So I don't have stage fright. But then I realized, you know, that is one manifestation of stage fright. So I don't have that problem anymore. And of course, there's other ways to solve the issue you were talking about. If you just need some visual cues, but you don't want to look away, there are ways to put the cues in front of the camera so you don't have to look away and you can see them. But that's just that's a technical thing to work out.
Yeah.
But I love that you chose emotions to help remember what you need to say next. And that's a lot like how the memory palace works.
Yeah.
Because you're using visual imagery, but they need to be strong visuals and intense and sometimes even violent, because you remember the things that are more emotional.
Yeah.
And so attaching images with these strong emotions as well makes an even stronger connection and easier to remember.
Yeah.
So it's great that you came up with that.
took some time, but yeah, I finally got there and realized that's the why for me anyway. I have to say, you know, everything that you've mentioned here and, you know, everything that you've gone through, like your journey and so forth, what would you say is the biggest aha moment for you specifically through your journey? Do you have any major moment that you recall?
My coaching journey, yeah. My biggest aha moment is, you know, spoiler, I already mentioned it, was I need a coach. Yeah. It's like, yes, if I get a coach, now I don't have to figure it out and not know if I'm doing something right or wrong. I can have guidance from someone who's experienced. You know, the aha moment really was just that I'm what they call a solopreneur. I'm the only person in my business, but I still don't have to do it alone, even though I'm the only person in my business.
Yeah.
And that was a big aha moment.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And that leads me to the next question, which you've answered anyway, which was what advice would you give to anyone starting a business such as this? But it's so true. Coaches really, you know, we don't have to be alone. And I think a lot of us do have a tendency to do that when we're starting out anyway. We think, you know, well, I can do this. I can get this started. And obviously, you know, finances might take a part in that decision-making as well. But if there's anywhere that you're going to invest, I personally would say too, you know, invest in a coach if you can, because that gives you the direction you may need that you don't realize that you need at the time. You've been fabulous to chat to today, Ken. You're absolutely amazing. And I'd love to ask you, what legacy are you looking to leave, whether it be personal or business?
What legacy? Oh, wow. How about one personal and one business?
Okay.
YouTube. What my business legacy, I would like to leave as many people without speaking anxiety as possible. I really feel like I want to just help as many as I can, because when it comes down to it, it's quite simple to solve. And I've seen how it can affect people's lives in such a negative way. I mean, there were people who passed on promotions because it would mean they'd have to lead a team. Yes. There were people who got fired from their job because they couldn't stand up and give a 2-minute talk to the corporation, you know. Mm. It's a shame, right? And I want to stop that for as many people as I can. I want to enable people to be able to just get up and talk whenever they want to. That's the business legacy I'd like to leave. The personal legacy, of course, I mentioned I started doing all this when my daughter was born. So my personal legacy, of course, is to provide for her the best possible life that we can. So,
perfect big why. Perfect
big
why.
Sure.
I would like to ask you, though, is there an offer that you'd like to share with our audience that are listening to today?
Sure, absolutely. So I have developed an online workshop. It's a 90-minute workshop called Confidence on Demand. And this workshop is the first part of the full speaking anxiety program that I have.
Yep.
But I want to emphasize, so really, really quick, let me just throw one more thing in there. And that even if you don't have speaking anxiety, everyone probably gets a little bit nervous before some presentation. And that is totally normal.
Yeah.
And what a lot of people just encounter as nervousness, they think of it as stage fright or as speaking anxiety. So a lot of people don't, like that 75% of people that I mentioned are really just nervous, more so than really having speaking anxiety. So for that, Confidence on Demand is actually the full solution that probably 75% of people need. It works by itself as a self-contained solution, but it is one part of the full program, which it's a very necessary part. And the good news is, I mean, it's only $37, but I've recently added a choose your price option where zero is an acceptable choice. So you can pay $37, you can pay nothing, you can, you know, pay me $300 if you want, but that's not really required. And this is a program that my coach, when I first released this, he wanted me to sell it for $200. And I was thinking, really? And I was thinking, that's not enough. And he wanted it to be a low ticket offer to, you know, help attract people. Well, it's much better as a $37 offer, because that's kind of a no-brainer. If you have speaking anxiety, give it a try. If you pay the $37, it also has a money-back guarantee. So, you know, you have the choice of doing that, pay nothing. It's worth a try.
You're amazing.
For most people, this will be all that you need.
Oh, that's fantastic, Ken. That's amazing. And all those details to the offer will be in our podcast summary below. So the link will be there. Make sure you click on the link and take up the offer, because I know I am. I'm going to have a look at it. But thank you so much for your time, Ken. You've been amazing to talk to. And you just, yeah, thank you so much for your time. And everyone out there, be sure to click on the link and don't forget to subscribe to the Wise Zone podcast. Thanks again, Ken.
Thank you. I'd appreciated it. Fun.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Wise Zone podcast. If you enjoyed and have been inspired by this episode and you'd like to support the podcast, do subscribe and please share it with others. Post about us on social media or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from me, Nikki Kelly, you can follow me on Instagram at Wise Dome Podcast, WISEDOME Podcast. I'm Nikki Kelly. Thanks again, and we'll catch up next time.